are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me, as always, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. I'd call it Misery Monday, but thankfully for our listeners, I already covered that in a special edition Saturday episode. So we are turning the page from that ugly loss to the Rams on Thursday night, jumping right into preparing for week 6 when the Seahawks play the Steelers. We got a lot of interesting topics on tap today. Going to continue to look at how the Seahawks offense is going to be different without Russell Wilson under center for the next several weeks. Jamal Adams, are the Seahawks using him properly on defense? And we're going to dish out some quarterly report cards on offense. Thanks for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen every day. We are free and available on all platforms. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. This is going to be a week of firsts for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, and not necessarily for a good reason, but we know number 3 is not going to be under center when the Seahawks face the Steelers in Pittsburgh on Sunday. It's going to snap a 149 consecutive start streak for Russell Wilson, the 5th longest by a quarterback in NFL history. That's unfortunate. And then today, the Seahawks having a short practice on Monday since they had this mini bye. No Russell Wilson on the field in uniform. He was out there sporting street clothes, but it was the first practice of his career that he was not at least limited. He has always participated in practice, even when he had the knee injury in 2016. And this was the first practice where all he could really do was be a celebratory coach on the field. And it's going to take an adjustment period for everybody involved, including Wilson himself.
Yeah, it is going to be an adjustment period. At the same time, as you said, he was on the field, and the Seahawks are fortunate that they have one of the better backup quarterbacks in all of the NFL. And it's not like the Seahawks are going to be playing one of the best teams in all of the NFL. The Pittsburgh Steelers have had their struggles also. And I think the Seahawks fans should be a little bit comforted by the fact that Geno Smith pretty damn well when he had his opportunity against the Los Angeles Rams, a team that has a much more formidable defense than the Pittsburgh Steelers have. And so, again, I think that obviously the injury to Russell Wilson is earth-shattering from a Seahawks perspective. But at the same time, because you do have a quality backup quarterback in Geno Smith, one who has started many, many games over his career, who came into this last week's performance against the Los Angeles Rams and promptly threw a touchdown, then I think that you have to have a little bit of confidence that all could be well. And if Russell Wilson is able to get back onto the field, perhaps in that earlier 4-to-week window rather than the latter 4-to-week window that some have been suggesting, then there is still a possibility the Seahawks may be just fine without number 3 ready to go immediately.
Yeah, I talked about this a little bit on Saturday. There are reasons for optimism with Geno Smith under center when you consider the schedule that the Seahawks have coming up. The Steelers' defense is pretty good, but they have had their share of issues during this season. They have the same record as the Seahawks at 2-3. They do have a really good win against the Buffalo Bills. The Broncos are a solid team they beat this weekend. But otherwise, it's been a rough start for the Steelers. And then you get the Saints the following week, who have been really good a few of their games. They've also had a few games where they have not been so good. And a lot of that has gone with how Jameis Winston has played under center, running their offense. And then you have the Jaguars in week 8, who have yet to win a game. And that looks to be a sinking ship. We've already seen John Gruden resign from his coaching position with the Raiders. I'm wondering if Urban Meyer is even going to be on the sideline in week 8. It seems like that situation is trending towards him potentially being out in some way, shape, or form. So this is a suitable schedule to not have Russell Wilson. They still got to go out and they got to win games. But if Geno Smith can come close to replicating what he did on Thursday night, and he's able to produce some efficient drives, be accurate with the football, don't turn it over. That was a big issue for him with the Jets. With the weapons they've got around him, he never had a DK Metcalf or a Tyler Lockett when he was playing in New York. He's got Gerald Everett now coming off the COVID list. They've got a quality stable of running backs. Chris Carson could be back this weekend after missing Thursday's game with a neck issue. So they've got plenty of weapons. And I thought the O-line played really well in front of him against a ferocious front seven for the Rams. If that line can play the way they did down the stretch on Thursday night, I think this offense is going to be okay. And again, I don't want to say that Geno Smith is better than Russell Wilson, because you and I both know that's not even close to being the case. But they do have one of the better backup quarterbacks in the league, a player in Geno Smith that has started a lot of games. And the fact that he is an athletic quarterback with a big arm, you should be able to run your entire playbook with him. And quite frankly, Shane Waldron looked pretty darn comfortable calling an offense for him on Thursday night. Seahawks fans have to hope that that carries over into the first start he's had since way back in 2017.
Yeah, but that's the thing. As you just articulated, Corbin, I mean, you think about the quarterbacks that the Seattle is going to be facing here. Now, you know, Russell Wilson is so darn good that he was, you know, the best player on the field often. And so there were many games where the quarterback was so good for the Seahawks that they were able to win games that, frankly, they should have lost. But you tell me, of the remaining games before Seattle goes to a week nine bye, you know, you got Ben Roethlisberger, who, let's face it, is not nearly what he once was. You have Jameis Winston, as you mentioned. You have Trevor Lawrence in week eight. And then you have the week nine bye. So, again, you have a four-week schedule here moving forward that before Russell Wilson is likely to be back onto the field for the Seahawks, that who knows? I mean, crazy things are happening. As you just mentioned, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the fact that two of their most impressive games so far happened to go against their best competition. But they've actually been as helter-skelter as anybody in all the NFL. So, obviously, again, the injury to Russell Wilson is as big as it can get. But at the same time, you just look at the rest of the schedule right now, the way it sets up. And, again, as I mentioned before, Russell Wilson can win you games. I don't see a lot of games where Geno Smith loses them. I think that it's going to be absolutely critical that Seattle's running game gets a little bit more on track. Obviously, that their defense gets more on track. We're going to be talking about that here a little bit more soon. But I don't think that the Seahawks suddenly have the, oh my goodness, the sky is falling kind of mentality, because Geno Smith, the veteran that he is going to be leading the charge at this point. There are a lot of NFL teams out there where they go from their starting quarterback to their backup quarterback, and my goodness, they are not going to ever win a single game again. I think that Geno Smith actually gives the Seahawks a pretty good opportunity to win. And it's not just me saying that. It's not just rose or blue-colored glasses saying that. Vegas themselves have put Seattle as a 2.5-point favorite on the road in Pittsburgh to be able to play with the Steelers. So there's a lot of people out there who think that the Seahawks are going to come in angry and ready to play in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that believe that. Now, obviously, they got to go out of the field and they got to do it. And this is a Steelers team that has plenty of talent, particularly on the defensive side of the football. Ben Roethlisberger looked a lot better this weekend against a Broncos defense that has a lot of talent in the secondary. Kind of took back a turn with the clock a little bit in this game after really struggling the first four games of the year. But the Seahawks can win this game. They can win every one of the next three contests. It's not impossible. They could be 5-3 going into their bye week. They just need Geno Smith to take care of the football. He's going to have to be able to get the ball downfield to his receivers a little bit, mix in some run plays. They used a read option the other night, which I can't remember the last time they did that with Russell Wilson, but they'll do it with Geno Smith because he can move. They have the entire playbook at their disposal. Really, the big key, though, is going to be, can you get your defense on track? Because I thought whenever Russell Wilson got banged up, whenever this inevitably happened and he was going to miss time with an injury, I thought that would be the biggest storyline. But going into the second quarter, we'll talk about what the real biggest storyline has been, and that's been an atrocious defense. In particular, we are going to look at how one player may or may not be used properly to this point by the Seahawks coaching staff. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another to let you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes, no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's not an annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. The Seahawks, the last 4 weeks, they joined exclusive company for the wrong reasons. They became just the fourth defense in NFL history since the merger to give up 450 total yards or more in four consecutive games. And it's weird saying this because it should be shocking, but we know this defense last year was on pace to obliterate the yards record. And obviously not a record you want to break, but the fact that this has happened now two consecutive seasons to open the year in the first month or so that they have been this historically bad, it's an indictment on the players. It's an indictment on the coaching staff. I want to talk in particular about one player and how the Seahawks have chose to use him up to this point. And that is Jamal Adams. He has been a player under much scrutiny. You go back to Thursday night's game, that pass that Matt Stafford threw to DeSean Jackson that was badly underthrown. Jamal Adams going back in too deep coverage, wasn't able to turn and track the football. That play was really difficult for him to make. There was also a touchdown that he gave up one-on-one in man coverage against Tyler Higbee where he just flat out got burned. You don't expect a $17 million a year safety to make mistakes like that. And unfortunately, it's happened too much and we haven't seen the impact plays. But at this point, Rob, I think it's worth discussing because you and I both know how big of a talent Jamal Adams is, how he can disrupt offenses. And he's such a unicorn, a very unique skill set. It doesn't feel, at least in my opinion, like this coaching staff is doing him anything to benefit him at this point with how they are deploying him. And it's really a disservice to the defense as well, because you're not maximizing his strengths and he's supposed to be one of your best, if not the best defensive player on your team. And you're not maximizing his strengths. It feels like he's got one hand tied behind his back right now. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Seahawks maybe are trying to fit him like a square peg into a circular hole on their defense. And it's not working.
It's obviously not working. I mean, the fact that the Seahawks, as you just mentioned, are historically bad, not just bad now, not just bad last year, but 2 years in a row now where you've started the season and you are historically bad. And let's face it, you haven't played one of the most dynamic offenses in all of the NFL in the Arizona Cardinals. They are coming up. The Pittsburgh Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger demonstrating how well he can bounce back this past week against a defense in the Denver Broncos, who are one of the best statistically and just from a scouting perspective. And for the Steelers to have the impressive performance that they had last week against the Broncos, you can see that there are all kinds of scary things on the horizon for the Seahawks if they don't wake up. So, yeah, I think that we absolutely should be focusing on Jamal Adams and the Seahawks' struggles with how they're using him. And I love that you and others have used this term unicorn with Jamal Adams, because I would agree he is a very unique player. And that is how kind of people like to talk about with a unicorn. They're just special. They stand apart from, say, other horses out there. And Jamal Adams is that. He is very unique. If you are putting him in position to play coverage where he struggled at LSU, he struggled with the New York Jets, then suddenly expect him to be magical against some of the most dynamic offenses in all of the NFL, the most dynamic tight ends, the most dynamic wide receivers, slot receivers in the NFL, then you are asking him to do things that he does not do very well. To me, the biggest issue is the fact that it's not that Seattle's pass rush without Jamal Adams has been very impressive. Other than Daryl Taylor, we haven't seen anybody from Seattle's pass rush consistently get home. So why not use Jamal Adams in that way, especially when you are desperate for a pass rush? So to me, that's the thing, is that, again, this idea of a unicorn. Use Jamal Adams the way that he is special. We talked about this before. The Pittsburgh Steelers are going to spread you out. They do have one of the better receiving backs in all of the NFL. They have some pretty good tight ends as well. But they also have a quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger who hasn't been able to run since he was running from people back in Miami of Ohio. So you have to be able to take advantage of what makes Jamal Adams special. And again, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and nobody knows this better than Pete Carroll because he coached him and knew him. But the Pittsburgh Steelers had one of the great instinctive safeties of all time in Troy Polamalu. And at times, Jamal Adams has been described as Troy Polamalu. Those instincts that made Polamalu special are some of the things that make Jamal Adams special as well. But if you don't allow him to rush the quarterback, then what the heck are you doing? You are, as you said, putting one arm behind his back, and we saw what happens. He is not able to locate the football with his back turned, and that is going to continue to be a problem, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are just chomping at the bit to take advantage of that exact same matchup.
And I will say this. I wrote an article about this particular issue earlier today on the Seahawk Maven, 1,500 words looking at this issue. And you look at the coverage numbers, I don't think Jamal Adams has been as bad as what a lot of fans are letting on. You had those couple plays that didn't go well against the Rams. There were a few plays earlier in the season that maybe didn't go well in coverage. But overall, his numbers have not been that bad. Quarterbacks are posting an 89.6 rating against him, which isn't great, but it's not a bad rating either. He's given up one touchdown. But just the way they are deploying him, last year, according to Pro Football Focus, he was used as a single high or two deep safety on just 19% of his defensive snaps. He's at 35% for this year. That is a huge jump in the number of plays where he's way off the football and he just doesn't have the feel. He is not a ball hawk. He doesn't have the feel to be doing that consistently. Now, I wonder if a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Seahawks were so neglectful with their cornerback spot, and now they have to have more two deep safety coverages to try to cover up that fatal flaw on their defense. That might be part of it, but he's just not playing near as much in the box. It's gone from 56% of his snaps last year where he was either on the line or in the box to just 46%, a 10% reduction. That's a pretty significant drop off. So they're not playing him up in the front seven as much where he's at his best. And they're trying to use him as a deep coverage safety. And he's capable at times, but 35-40%, that is way too high in my opinion. Then you look at the rushing, he's blitzed only 5% of the time this year. Last year it was around 12%. And I'm not going to sit here and say the Seahawks need to blitz him 25 times a game because I don't think that's the answer either. But they are not sending him enough. They are not mixing him into their pass rush enough and really playing to what makes him such a special player. And you feel like if he's up in the front seven, he can help with the run defense too, that quite frankly has been really disappointing this year. They're one of the worst run defenses in the NFL to go with their coverage issues. Jamal Adams can help solve both of those issues if he's used correctly. And the numbers bear out that they simply are not. They're trying to make him into a player that he's never going to be. He might improve some as a covered safety playing deep. You can use him that way sometimes, but just way too often right now, Rob, they're dropping him back deep and not enough where they are really accentuating what makes him an all-pro player in this league.
Yeah, there's two things real quick I want to kind of mention about that. I mean, for one, I do think that you're going to see Seattle's run defense improve over the next couple of weeks because Geno Smith does not have the huge over-the-top arm that is most likely to create the big chunk plays that Russell Wilson presents. Even when Seattle has been able to get those big chunk plays, those big touchdowns, then, of course, that doesn't give your defense much time to, you know, get a little bit of a breath and to recover. So I do think that you are going to see that Seattle's defense is going to get a little bit more time to get their catch their breath, and that's going to lead to bigger play. I think that just the fact that they're desperate now, that they can't rely on Russell Wilson saving them at the end of the day. They have to play a little bit more physical football. And then again, just the level of competition that the Seahawks are going to be facing over the next couple of weeks, that you are going to be facing some quarterbacks who are a little bit more willing to throw the ball into coverage. You might be able to get some big plays that way. So again, I agree with you. I think that Seattle has to use Jamal Adams a little bit more aggressively. And I just think that one of the things that comes down to with Jamal Adams is that when I watched him at LSU, when I watched him at New York, and I watched him last year, of course, with Seattle, to me, he is a very instinctive player. He can time his blitzes. And so if you are just putting him up at the line of scrimmage, then the quarterback of a quality quarterback, at least, will be able to see where he is, be able to adjust. But when was the last time that you saw a safety from Seattle, especially Adams, really rushing, completely changing his primary initial look, and then rushing towards the line of scrimmage and timing the blitz effectively, right, as the ball is snapped? That's where Jamal Adams is special, that initial quickness. And so you have to just say, hey, we are going to blitz on this play. We're going to wait until the very last second, and we're going to be aggressive. And it's on the rest of the defense, as well as Adams, to be able to adjust. Are you creating some opportunities for the quarterback to make a big play over the top? Sure. But you were doing that against some of the very talented quarterbacks in all of the NFL, the Matt Staffords of the league. Kirk Cousins, it's funny how people blast him. That's one of his strengths, is his pre-snap diagnosis. That has never been one of the strengths with Roethlisberger. It's never been one of the strengths, obviously, with Trevor Lawrence. I mean, certainly not with Jameis Winston. So use that and attack rather than playing off the way that they have and basically just taking what the offense is willing to give you.
And Coach Carroll was talking about this on Friday. He was saying that one of the big reasons they haven't blitzed Adams near as much this year has been because of the formations they've been facing. And he even said it's about the amount of spread they've been seeing. And I'm just going to say this. Every team is facing spread offenses in today's NFL. It is going to be that way for the rest of time. I mean, we've seen that move up to the NFL from high school and college football. Teams are going to spread you out. They're going to get 3, 4, 5 receivers in the field. But you look at the Seahawks defense statistically this year, they are number one among defenses in the number of plays that they have faced opponents that have had two backs on the field. They are also in the top three for the number of plays on defense where opponents have had multiple tight ends. They are near the bottom of the league in plays against 3+ wide receiver sets. And so that kind of goes counter to what Carroll was saying about the formations being the big reason they're not blitzing him. It just seems like they are trying to make him into a player that really fits their scheme more than the scheme fitting the player. And I feel like moving forward, for this defense to play to its potential, they need to have Jamal Adams playing at his very best. And right now, he's nowhere close. We're not seeing the big impact plays that you expect from the highest paid safety in the NFL. And I believe a lot of it falls back at this point to the coaching staff. They've got to do a better job putting him in a position where he can be successful and really utilize his unique skills. To this point, they've done a subpar job doing that in the first 5 games of the season. When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to shift gears over to offense. We have reached the quarter mark. I guess you can call it that in a 17-game season. We don't have a clean-cut quarter anymore, but we are going to hand out grades for each of Seattle's offensive positions in our quarterly report card. You won't want to miss it. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Did you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors, plus the occasional limited-time flavor? When you talk to a Built Bar fan, they're definitely passionate about their favorites. If you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, you're missing out. There's outstanding ones like cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, my personal favorite, peanut butter brownie. If you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mixed box where you'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. And not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting out there on the market, they're also healthy too. 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, just 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams of net carbs. 9 amazing flavors, all tasty and all healthy. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCK15 and you'll get 15% off your first order. Use the promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. Glad to have you tuning in. Let's get to our first report card of the 2021 season. It used to be back in the day when we had 16 games on the schedule. After the first 4 games of the year, you'd have a nice 25% quarterly report card. Well, we don't have that luxury anymore. And since you and I were not math teachers for a reason, we're not going to try to break down percentages here. But we are roughly at the quarter mark. And with the Seahawks being on a mini bye coming off of Thursday's loss to the Rams, we decided it was time to dish out our first grade card. So we're going to start today's episode on offense. We'll look at defense on tomorrow's show. Let's start at the quarterback position. As we talked about the first quarter, Russell Wilson will be out for at least the next 3 weeks, maybe longer, but we have gotten to see him for most of the first 5 weeks of the season. How would you assess Seattle's quarterback play during the first 5 weeks?
You know, I think that you have to go kind of A minus B plus. I think that the fact that Russell Wilson has been as successful as he has, I mean, I think there's plenty of other positions that you can criticize, including on the coaching staff. But I think the quarterback play has actually been pretty good. And it's not just Russell Wilson, not just the fact that he was the most efficient quarterback in all of the NFL before that he had his injury, that he was one of the only ones who had not yet thrown an interception, at least up to that point, but the fact that Geno Smith played as well as that he did. I think that you can criticize the quarterback because obviously at the end of the game, you have to score more points than your opponent. And the fact that Seattle is 2-3 at this point and has been outplayed by some of the other quarterbacks. If you just look at a comparison between Seattle's quarterbacks and some of the other quarterbacks that they faced, sure, you can be critical. But I think that the quarterback play, specifically the quarterback play, has been one of the strengths for the Seahawks and one of the reasons why their 2-3 record at this point is still pretty surprising, at least to me.
I'm going to give a B plus two. I can't go quite an A because we've had too many quarters where the Seahawks offense has gone MIA, and I think the quarterback's got to get a little blame there, especially the Titans game. I thought that he really did not play well at all in the second half. He's had a number of third quarters where he's really struggled. So I can't go as far as giving an A. When he's been on, he's been as good as any quarterback in the NFL. And I also bump this grade up because I think Russell Wilson on his own, I think a B is just about right. But I think with how Geno Smith played and his limited action on Thursday night, I think a B plus is just about right. You saw a really confident, poised quarterback, something I never saw when he was in New York. And so that was a little bit of a shock to the system, just seeing how comfortable he looked in that offense running Shane Waldron's scheme. And so B plus, I think that this is one of the biggest positions of strength for the Seahawks. And now we'll get to find out how much their depth is a strength in this position, something we've never had to worry about in Russell Wilson's first 9 seasons under center. But now we'll get that chance with Geno Smith. So I'm going to go B plus. Let's go to the running back position now. Chris Carson's looked pretty good at times. He's also missed a game due to injury. Seems like that happens every year. And he's had a couple games where he hasn't been quite as effective. How have you viewed the running back room in these first 5 games?
I would struggle giving them anything higher than a C. I mean, it's been average at best. I mean, Chris Carson is talented. Alex Collins has shown all kinds of flashes. I've been impressed by what I've seen in limited doses from DJ Dallas and Travis Homer as well. I still want to see a running back for the Seahawks run for 100 yards. Call me crazy, but that's, to me, the benchmark of what a quality running game does. And Seattle not only has not had a single rusher go for over 100 yards, there's been so many games they haven't had as a total team run for 100 yards. And just the way that the NFL is geared now, it's easier to run for over 100 yards because, as you talked about before, and Pete Carroll has kind of claimed at times, that the defenses are so spread out now. I just don't give a damn. I mean, they run the ball. And so if Chris Carson was playing with the effectiveness, and we'll get to the offensive line in a moment. And I gave the quarterbacks a B plus, and that is by far the highest grade I'm going to give any of Seattle's offensive positional groups at this point in the season. But I think that Seattle's running back, I thought, was going to be a strength heading into this season. And I think that across the NFL, it has been average at best.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a B minus. I'm going to be a little more generous just because what Alex Collins did in that 49ers game, checking in second half, getting a lot of action, really was a difference maker, getting that win in Santa Clara. Chris Carson's had a couple games that he has looked really good. And I don't know that the production, we'll get to this here in a moment, but I don't know that the production issues really fall that much on this running back room. I think that they have gotten good contributions from a number of players. It stinks that we haven't gotten to see any of Rashad Penny, but at this point, that's kind of to be expected because he has just not been able to stay healthy. But really, that's been the issue, keeping guys on the field. I have been impressed by Alex Collins. He was able to make some things happen with limited blocking in front of him against the Rams. So I'm not going to go quite as low as you, but I want to see a 100-yard game from a back. It feels like it's been like 5 years since the last time a running back went for over 100, and the Seahawks need to be able to do that. They have to get that run game on track. The running backs are part of that, but I think they've been a little better than maybe you gave them on their grades. Let's get to the receiver position now. I'm just going to be up front. You said that the B plus for the quarterback was the highest grade for you. I've got to give the receiver group an A minus. I'm not going to go above that because DK Metcalf's had a few games. He wasn't quite as sharp as we expected. Tyler Lockett's had a few games here recently. He hasn't been quite as productive, but the huge games that he had the first two games this season, breaking Steve Largent's franchise record for the most yardage by receiver in the first two games. DK Metcalf's really come alive the last couple of weeks. The fact they've been able to overcome the fact that D. Eskridge has missed the last four games. He's going to miss more time on injury reserve with a concussion. They've gotten contributions from Freddie Swain. Penny Hart this last game made a few nice plays for him. They've been able to overcome that. I still feel like this has been the best position group for them on offense from a consistency standpoint. Obviously, Russell Wilson's thrown some bombs to these guys, but it's really helped having receivers that can make those plays and get open. So I'm giving them a solid A-minus on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I disagree. I mean, I think that DK Metcalf is the most physically gifted wide receiver in all the NFL, in my opinion. And the fact that when they needed him to play big and go up and get jump balls, he doesn't. He falls down into the ground. They're calling on guys like Penny Hart, literally the most diminutive receiver on Seattle's roster, to kind of be that guy in the jump ball situations in the end zone. And he falls down, when he needs to kind of get up and go after the football. Tyler Lockett is as consistent and reliable as it gets, and yet still he has struggled with inconsistency. I know that anything that's in his zip code, he's going to come down with. I mean, he's proven that over his career. But I just think for all of the talent that the Seahawks have at the wide receiver positions, I still want to see more. And it's not just, again, the fact that we tend to focus in on DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, but the fact that Freddie Swain, you see flashes, and it's not all his fault, but I think that you need to see a little bit more consistency from him. The fact that D. Eskridge at this point has been nothing, I think absolutely plummets the grade for me at this point at the wide receiver position. So again, I think I would give him a B. And even that, I feel like I'm being generous. I think that DK Metcalf has a plus kind of potential, but I want to see him be more than just one occasional slant for a touchdown and get up and be the physical guy. I want to see him be that physical guy every single play. I want to see there be more plays where he runs away from the defense, especially considering that you have one of the most accurate deep ball throwers in the NFL. And I'm looking forward to the Seahawks receivers trying to take that mantle. Geno Smith is going to need some help. And if the receivers don't give it to him over the next couple of games, Seattle is going to wind up losing several games in a row. And to me, this is the opportunity for the receivers to really, truly flex, not just do it in commercials or when everybody is talking about their blocking or whatever the case might be.
You want to talk about players that can have a prime opportunity to step up. It would be the tight end group. And I'm just going to be upfront right now. I don't think this is because of the players they have at the position necessarily, but I'm giving a D-plus to the tight ends because my expectations for this group were through the roof. And then week one, they teased the living daylights out of us. The tight ends were really active. We saw a couple nice catches from Will Dissly. Gerald Everett had a touchdown. It looked like with Shane Waldron bringing that Sean McVay-style offense to Seattle that they would finally utilize tight ends. That has not been the case, though, until Geno Smith played at the end of the game on Thursday night, and suddenly tight ends became a focal point. Will Dissly had a couple really nice catches on that long touchdown drive, but in between that season opener and that drive there, Russell Wilson, for whatever reason, just can't get on track with tight ends consistently, and part of it's in the middle of the field. I don't know that he just doesn't see them or whatever it is, but he has never been able to really develop that chemistry with the tight end. It's one of the reasons that the Jimmy Graham era, despite his numbers being really good, seemed disappointing. They just never hit off as people hoped. We didn't get to see Greg Olsen do that last year, the final year of his career. Jacob Hollister's numbers were down last year. This group overall, not a lot of opportunities for them in the passing game, and that has really surprised me because I thought in this offense, especially after what things looked like in week one, that tight ends would be much more involved. These guys can be a great security blanket for Geno Smith, who I think is going to take advantage of their presence a lot more than what we've seen from Russell Wilson throughout his career.
I 100% agree with you. I think that you are going to see the tight ends become much more involved in Seattle's offense now that Geno Smith is the quarterback. And that's not just because I think that Russell Wilson does struggle to throw the ball over the middle, which he has struggled for a long time. It makes some sense at his height that it's very difficult to throw right over the top. But I also think that, again, it's just going to be absolutely critical for the rest of Seattle's players to kind of step up their game. The fact that Gerald Everett is coming back from being out, and you know he wanted to play against his former team, the Rams. But I do think the Pittsburgh Steelers are a team that can be vulnerable because they are as aggressive as they are. And so I would not be surprised if you see immediate improvement there. And I would mention one other player. I blasted the Seahawks wide receivers in part because of the lack of really any impact from D. Eskridge. Same thing with Kobe Parkinson. I think that he is as physically gifted as Gerald Everett, and that's saying a lot. I think that he really is a talented player, but so far Seattle's primarily used him as a blocker. And while that is a testament to Parkinson getting bigger and stronger and nastier at the line of scrimmage, he is still 6'7" and has arms that go to the moon. Use him. And so if you're not using him, if you are relying on Will Disley, who, kind of like Tyler Lockett, has very reliable hands but isn't the kind of runaway threat that Everett and Parkinson on, then what the heck are you doing? To me, I would give that a D. I think that's a fair grade for the tight end position.
Now, let's finish up real quick with the offensive line. This is a group that has been inconsistent. They've been consistently inconsistent in basically every phase this year. I will admit, after a really strong start, I've been a bit disappointed with how Dwayne Brown has played the last couple of weeks. He's really struggled as of late. Getting Brandon Shell back was nice. They got decent reps out of Cedric Ogbuehi and Jake Kieran replacing him. Gabe Jackson's play has been kind of up and down. I thought he had a really good game, though, on Thursday against the Rams. Kyle Fuller's made some improvements as the years progressed. Still hasn't been great by any means. Damian Lewis has been kind of inconsistent. So when you're talking about a group that's been up and down, the only grade I can give them is a C, because they've had their moments, and I thought they played one whale of a game the other night. It's crazy that one of the better games they've had as a pass-protecting unit against Aaron Donald and company is the game that Russell Wilson gets hurt. But I thought they did a really nice job protecting both quarterbacks, especially when Smith came in. He was able to go through his progressions because of that group. You'd like to see them be more consistent, and part of that is making sure they have continuity. They can keep players out there. That's been a little bit of a struggle for them for several years running on that offensive line. But I can't go above a C. I'm not going to go below that, because when they've been good, they've been really solid. They've just really lacked the consistency up front, both in pass protection and in run blocking, which is part of the reason I gave the running backs a better grade than what you did. I think the line play has had a lot to do with the inconsistencies running the football.
I agree, and I love that you just made that point at the end there about pass protection versus run blocking. I think that Seattle's pass protection has been about average, better than I think a lot of people probably should have been expecting, considering the fact that you had Brandon Shell go down early. You did have an undrafted rookie free agent, and Jake Kieran playing meaningful snaps. You know, Cedric Ogbuehi has been basically cast aside in the NFL, and I thought that he's played fairly well. You have seen improved play from Kyle Fuller at the center position. There have been some good snaps. I just want to see more physicality at the point of attack in the running game. It is not all on the running backs to be able to create those yards, because there haven't been that many holes. Even the most dynamic runs that we've seen, like from Alex Collins, is mostly because of what he's been able to create on his own. So I'm going to give this group a C+, which is frankly better than I think that a lot of people would give them. I think it's so easy to just blame the offensive line, but I love the fact that you mentioned how well that the Seahawks offensive line played against the Rams. That Rams front is no joke, and it's not their fault that, you know, that they lost that game and they lost their quarterback when he didn't even get sacked on the play in which he got injured. And that's the thing, is it's so easy for people to blame them, but I think that they've actually been one of the hidden strengths of Seattle's offense to this point in the season.
And I think we've seen enough bright spots there. Again, more continuity. I could see this group getting better as the season goes on, and they better hope that that's the case so that Geno Smith has time. Again, he was able to go through his progressions. He was able to sit in the pocket and scan the field If he's not able to do that, that severely hinders the backup quarterback's ability to be effective, and he can get forced into some rough decisions and he can start throwing picks. So this line is going to continue to have a lot of weight on their shoulders. Can they step up and play like they did Thursday night more consistently? If they can, the Seahawks have a chance to win several of these games coming up, even without Russell Wilson. Thanks for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen every day. Now make your second listen, the Peacock and Williamson NFL show. Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson give you the expert NFL analyst, expert NFL analysis in less than 30 minutes. It's free and available on all platforms. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and the all-new Audacy app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on our Tuesday episode, it's Throwback Tuesday. We're going to revisit past matchups between the Seahawks and the Steelers. They usually only play every 4 years, but it's been just 2 years since their last matchup in Pittsburgh. Plus, we're going to take a look at what could potentially be some long-term changes coming with the first domino being Russell Wilson going down. Rob and I will discuss. You won't want to miss it. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.